Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Show. I'm Stu Whiffin. Joining me, as ever, Blake Harrison. You all right?
I'm good. I'm a little bit tired today.
Yeah.
Yeah. My son got in bed with us at about 1 a.m. and it was like what I imagine it must be like to sleep next to Carlos Condit. I was getting kneed in the back, elbowed in the back of the head. It was an eventful night.
Nice.
But I am excited because it's finally here.
It is.
UFC 300, baby.
That's what we're going to be talking about for not one, but two shows. So today, we're going to go through the main card. We're going to talk about all the big hitters. Then we're going to go on that sort of prelim thing that no one really cares about because there's nothing of note on there.
No. It's not like they've got like multiple champions. Not like two former champions are just opening the night.
On the fight pass prelims.
The debut of Kayla Harrison.
Yeah.
Aljamain Sterling, former champ, up against Calvin Kattar in his featherweight debut. Yuri Prohazka, Alexander Rakic. Nothing really great on that card, is
it? It's arguably the greatest card ever in the history of UFC.
That was going to be my opening question. Question to you was like, do you think UFC 300 is the greatest card of all time?
Stick a pin in that and we'll get to that. But first, we want to thank Ferocious Fightwear. We got to catch up with Ferocious Fightwear at the weekend.
Yes,
because,
we did.
We went to the Cage Warriors Academy show in Essex and bumped into next week's guest as well. We bumped into our friend Arnold Adam.
We did.
Which was nice. And former guest Jack Stone Mason. We saw him there. We didn't get a chance to catch up with Brad Pickett. We see him walk out one of his fighters who got a big win.
Yes.
Really good show. Really good show.
It was great, actually. Like supporting grassroots MMA. It was like lots of amateur fights, but a few pro fights as well. The standard was really high.
Yeah.
I feel like shows like that.
You say that, but on the day, I know you said about the first six or seven fights, you said you reckon you could have took them.
Oh, yeah. No, obviously not. I thought the standard was really, really high. I was really surprised at how even the amateur fights, you were like, this feels like a well-rounded fight.
Yeah.
There was a couple of mismatched fighters on there where it was like, I tell you what, the pacing of it was excellent. There was a lot of fights. It was like 28 fights. A lot of fights. And when I saw that, I was like, wow, this is going to be a long night. But the pacing of it was brilliant. Mm. It's just non-stop, back-to-back-to-back fights. It was absolutely fantastic.
Absolutely. And it was great to see Ferocious Fightwear. They had a big stall there. They sponsored a lot of the event. And we got to hang out, check out their wares. And you can do that too. And head over to ferociousfightwear.com because they sponsor this podcast. Is this the greatest UFC card ever?
I think it probably is, isn't it? I'm trying to think back to like, I wasn't watching it religiously enough when it was like 100.
Mm.
200, I don't think is as good as this card.
No, we had a little look at that on Saturday, didn't we? And it weren't as good.
No, I mean, 200 wasn't what it was supposed to be, though. I think like it ended up being, was it Nunes Tate was the headliner of 200?
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if Connor was maybe supposed to be on the card, but then he didn't. Obviously, Brock came in with all his PEDs and smashed up Mark Hunt. So it was the return of Brock, big star, huge star name. And then there was supposed to be DC versus John Jones, which would have made it even bigger card. But obviously, John Jones had whatever issues he had at the time. I don't know if it was PEDs or if it was something legal. I don't know. There's always stuff with John Jones, as we've seen recently in the press, that he's come out and I can't believe what's going on. 300's got too much stuff
going on.
There's
too much good stuff. Too much to worry about.
Let's not worry about John Jones and whatever the hell's gone on there. But it was supposed to be that. And then Anderson Silva ended up stepping up in weight. And it was, you know, a light heavyweight Daniel Cormier against a blown up middleweight Anderson Silva. The fight was only going to go one way. Mm-hmm. It went that way. This overall, I think top to bottom, prelims, everything is, I think it has to be the greatest card ever made. Is it going to live up to the hype? Is it going to be as good as what like 299 was or like 185 seems to be like in a lot of people's eyes the best card. 185 was the Conor Mendez card, I believe, with Lawler and McDonald on the co-main event, and there was loads of fantastic fights on that card, loads of great finishes. So will it in hindsight live up to all those cards? We'll have to wait and see. But on paper, 300 is absolutely stacked. So many former champions, as we've just mentioned. And the show's so big that, as we've just said, we are going to be doing UFC 300 in two parts. This episode, we will be talking about the main card, maybe one of the prelim fights. We're not sure yet. We'll see how we go for time. And then in part two, we'll be talking about all the prelim fights. But as we were joking about earlier, the prelims are so bloody good.
Absolutely.
Please do tune in for that. Don't just think, oh, there's no titles on the line, it's not going to be great.
Absolutely.
The prelims are stacked.
If you haven't subscribed yet, go and subscribe, because that way you won't miss the next show and you won't miss any of the shows, because we've got a great show that's in the bag with Arnold Allen that's coming next week as well. Mm-hmm. So, is it next week or the week after? I'm not too sure.
One of them.
And also, if you really like this podcast and you'd like to show your thanks, in the show notes, there's a link to buy me a coffee. And you can go over there and you can go, cheers for the show, boys, and buy us a coffee. Simple as that, in the show notes. Right, let's start at the very top.
Oh, yeah.
So we are obviously talking Pereira and former guest of the show, Jamahal Hill. The picture there, if you're watching, Jamahal's still got the strap over his shoulder.
I like that you've done that, because he never actually lost the belt.
He didn't, did he? He was very much the
gentleman. Is that the reason that you did that?
No, I couldn't find another one online.
Ah, fair enough.
But yeah, like you say, he was a gent. He gave up the belt. He didn't want to sort of stop the division from moving.
Yep.
In the light of that, we saw Pereira just blow himself up to light heavyweight and just continues just stomping across people.
This isn't the main event that everyone wanted. When everyone was talking about UFC 300 main events, this was quite far down the pecking order. I think we've since learned that it was supposed to be the 301 headliner, and because they couldn't work things out with either a huge name or, you know, the likes of Izzy and Dricus du Plessis or whatever it would have been, there was Leon was given three various opponents that maybe would have worked. There was Hamzat, I believe. There was Bilal, which Bilal would have taken, but the UFC clearly thought it wasn't big enough. I think there was someone else in there as well. Maybe it was Islam, maybe it was someone else. I can't remember. But point being, this was nowhere near the top choice for the UFC for UFC 300. Looking at it now that the dust has settled, the announcement is weeks and weeks old, are you looking at this fight in a different light and feeling quite excited about this now that it's, you know, just a few days away?
I think when we spoke about this on one of the news shows when it got announced, I think one of us leant on what you just said there as well and said that, you know, by the time the machine goes to work on this, it's going to whip you up. And I don't know, because we thought, oh, are we going to see the return of Conor, Brock, Ronda, whatever? And what we got was Pereira and Jamahal Hill. Pereira, obviously, his highlight reel's insane, and he is a star. I wouldn't say he's a superstar. Jamahal Hill, I don't know. I think for a lot of casuals, they might not even know who he is. Yes, he's the former champ, but I don't think he's got that superstar quality yet.
No.
But I watched the UFC show, the UFC 300 show that they put on, they put out last week.
The countdown one.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's loads. There's quite a few. There's a long one. I think they've chopped it up into little ones. Anyway, I watched the one about these two. First, that's a lie. Actually, the first one I watched was about the BMF, but then I watched this, and you forget how really fucking good Jamal Hill is,
and yeah.
And then they were showing loads of the kind of kickboxing events that Pereira was just literally just decapitating people. And I think this has got the ingredients to be one of them ones that I think people might have been a little bit underwhelmed with, but I think we could end up Sunday morning going, holy shit, that was ridiculous.
I think we absolutely could as well. I think actually it's a far more interesting fight than I gave it credit for initially. I think even I was saying it's a good fight. I just didn't think it was a 300 main event fight. And I still sort of stand by that. But I think the fact that the card is so good top to bottom,
yeah,
I don't really care so much. I think that one thing I wanted to ask you, I want to get onto how we feel the fight might go and the lead up to this fight. And I think it's very important to talk about the fact that Jamal Hill was coming off of an Achilles injury and he was supposed to have an extra month's preparation before this fight. And it's been brought forward, as we mentioned. He should have been fighting at 301. He's now fighting at 300. How is that going to play a factor into Jamal Hill's prep? Is he going to have enough time? How is he going to come back after an Achilles injury? A lot of people say that once you have an Achilles injury, you're never the same again. So that's really interesting as well. But I also wanted to ask you and talk about what you're saying about how good Jamal Hill is. He is good. He's done very, very good things. But when I look at it, I wanted to just ask the question, is Alex Pereira's two light heavyweight wins over Jan Blachowicz and Jiří Prochazka better than all of Jamal Hill's light heavyweight wins? And I'll just run through Jamal Hill's light heavyweight wins. In the UFC. Darko Stosic, never even heard of him. Klitson Abreu, which was overturned to a no contest. Ovince St. Preux, where he got a good finish. A loss to Paul Craig, obviously. Win over Jimmy Crute in the first round. Win over Johnny Walker in that spectacular knockout in the first round where Johnny Walker went flying backwards.
So weird.
It was really weird, wasn't it? Thiago Santos. And then Glover Teixeira, where he put in a phenomenal performance to win the belt against Glover. That was probably the best performance of his entire career. But those names matched up against Blachowicz and Prochazka. Who has the better light heavyweight resume? The two for Alex Pereira or all of those names, albeit I would say, particularly when you're looking at the likes of like Thiago Santos, that hasn't aged well. Thiago Santos was phenomenal for a point.
OSP's really been on the slide for a long time as well.
Yeah, yeah. Jimmy Crute hasn't done huge things of late. Johnny Walker has been a real mix and match. You never know kind of what Johnny Walker you're going to get. And then Glover was brilliant, was the champ, beat Jan Blachowicz, but was still like, I don't know, was he 72 when he lost the belt to Jamal Hill? So how does that stack up for you?
He can only beat what's in front of him,
yep.
Right? And so far, so good. I mean, he was putting in a decent performance against Paul Craig as well before Paul bent his arm the wrong way. But I don't know. I think there's been so much hype around Pereira from the moment he stepped in with the whole backstory of Izzy, the fights of Izzy. I think the way he carries himself as well, he's stone cold, isn't he?
Yeah.
And I think that makes him more interesting and more a bit more mystique around him, that he's this sort of Ivan Drago type character,
yep.
Man of few words, but just absolutely destroys people. I think fans like that.
Yeah.
And I think Jamal Hill's fights, again, maybe apart from the Glover one, haven't necessarily been explosive. And but the Johnny
but
Walker
been
one,
explosive.
Sorry.
He's got knockouts.
But the hype machine around Jamal Hill is not what it was for Pereira. But
well, he hasn't had an Adesanya to sort of help lift him up,
yeah,
has he? Has,
yeah. And I think, you know, had he not got injured and kept the strap, I'd be interested to see, you know, what would have happened in yeah. that sort of, you know, time where he was sitting out recovering. And I mean, the story narrative as well that that should be touched upon here is obviously he took the belt from Glover Teixeira, yeah. who is one of the coaches and best buds with Pereira. So I think...
I really love their relationship, actually. On Instagram, the two of them are great.
Yeah.
Because Glover seems like really, like, almost like a lovable kind of uncle. He yeah. seems like a really affable, friendly bloke.
Yeah.
And then Pereira seems just like it's a stony-faced. yeah. But they have a really lovely relationship. I really like the two of them together.
And I mean, I don't know if that's going to play into the mindset of Pereira that he's got to avenge his coaches. Loss, I don't know.
Oh, I think it might do.
Do you think?
I like to think it does. I think those yeah. kind of storylines do add something. I think when we spoke to Nathaniel Wood, when he fought, was it Thomas Almeida or so? Or does he want Thomas? I can't remember.
It was Almeida.
But yeah, but like he's spoken about wanting to beat people for Brad or wanting to get a fight for Brad, whether it be against, you know, the Almeida. I can't remember if he fought Almeida or not, but... But yeah, but like avenging Brad's losses yeah. meant something to Nathaniel. Yeah. And I think that Alex will be similar. I just don't know how much he'll be able to take from Glover's experience or not, because it must mean something to have shared the cage with Jamahal Hill for 25 minutes. He must have got something from that he can take over to Pereira and give him some kind of information that will help him. However, the skill sets of Glover and Pereira are so different that how transferable will that information be when you've gone from a guy that is, you know, this heavy-handed jiu-jitsu guy
that will grind you and just, yeah, that's not Pereira.
No, Pereira is that one-shot knockout striker with, you know, questionable grappling, you would say. So, yeah, I don't know how transferable that's going to be, but it'll certainly be interesting. I think... it's interesting. You mentioned we bumped into Arnold Allen at the Cage Warriors Academy thing the other night. I was talking to him about this fight.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, well, one of the things that I think which was really interesting was the fact that Alex Pereira's leg kicks are so good. Like, we've seen that video of him just, like, tapping DC, and DC being like, they are lethal, and there's no real wind-up to it. It just seems to kind of put it out there, and they have a huge impact. Yuri Prohazka's leg was really, really sore in the fight that he lost the belt to Pereira. So... or was it vacant at the time? But so I was thinking, oh, well, that's going to be a big factor, especially with Jamahal Hill coming off his Achilles injury. But then I remembered, oh, well, Jamahal Hill's southpaw. So that's really going to take away that weapon for Pereira. I think it will take away that weapon for Pereira. Pereira will not have as much success with the leg kicks as he would have against an orthodox striker. Going southpaw is going to take away, I think, a lot of that for Pereira. However, what Arnold highlighted to me, which I completely forgot about, is when you're then orthodox against southpaw, the orthodox striker has more of an opening for a left hook. And Pereira has...
You don't want one off of him.
No, he's got one of the best left hooks in the game. So where I was thinking, oh, well, one of Pereira's biggest weapons, that low kick, is now going to be taken away from him. It does open up the other really devastating weapon for Pereira, which is that left hook. So I don't know which way that's going to go. I do think it's going to be an interesting striking battle.
Arnold also said, when we spoke about Hill's injury, he said a lot of fighters do not come back after that.
No. They don't. So is his movement going to be okay? Is he going to be able to avoid the big strikes of Pereira? Yeah. Is he going to, like... Here's the thing. If you're in Hill's corner, I think what you're doing is you're going, I know you're not a wrestler, but wrestle him. Because surely I would imagine Hill's wrestling is probably better than Pereira's, even if it might be lower level compared to some of the proper wrestlers in that division. But also it just gives
Do we get a boring fight then?
I don't think so. I don't think we get a boring fight because I don't know that Jamahal will have the skills to keep him down long enough. But what I think it might do is it just gives Pereira something else to think about. If you say to Pereira, we're just going to have a stand-up fight for the whole fight, then Pereira is just going to smash you up. He's got so much experience. He's had like so many kickboxing bouts. It's untrue.
Yeah.
So he's just going to be able to deal with Jamal so easily on the feet if that's all he has to worry about. But if Jamal can just shoot a couple of takedowns, even if he doesn't get him to the ground, it just opens up the worry in Pereira's mind. And then he has to maybe carry his hands a little bit lower to defend the shots, which might leave an opening for Jamal. We've seen those head kicks that he landed on Glover and how good they were. We've seen him knock out Johnny Walker. The guy has real power. So if he just gets Pereira second-guessing himself and worried about the takedowns, it will open up Jamal Hill striking a lot more, and that's why he should do it. It's not even about taking him down and keeping him down. It's about causing that worry, making Pereira second-guess himself. Does he have to carry his hands lower to defend the shot? And if he does, that just opens things up for Jamal. And then that evens the playing field on the feet, because I don't see Jamal being worried about being taken down. But if he can make Pereira worried about being taken down, it evens the playing field on the feet, which I think is the way Jamal will have to approach this fight. But we will have to see.
Blake Harrison, who wins?
Oh, I've got to go with Pereira. Just because I do think most of this will play out on the feet. I think Pereira's got the experience and he's just got so much power.
Good luck on that.
I don't think this goes to decision, this fight. Mm-hmm. No way. I think this fight is a knockout. I would lean Pereira, but I think it's got more chance of being a knockout than a decision by a long way.
Mm, I agree.
Yeah. Are you going Pereira?
Yeah.
Right. Yan Xiaonan taking on Zhang Wei Li. Thoughts and feelings?
I think Zhang Wei Li just leaps ahead of everyone else in that division. I think he's just incredible. And I see her getting I don't know if she's sort of stopping it, but I think she gets the win quite comfortably.
Yeah. It's funny, strawweight is sort of slowing down a little bit, isn't it? It's not the strawweight a few years ago was like, it was Joanna, Zhang, Rose. It had a lot going on for it. Andrade. There was a lot of kind of like, not superstars, but stars, you know, in that division. And I think that we're all really invested in the strawweight division and how that could go. And now it feels like in terms of contenders, it's really slowed down a bit. I mean, Rose has moved up to flyweight. Zhang doesn't defend the belt that regularly. It's like every 10 months or so. And it's meant that the build-up to this fight hasn't been what it could have been, because Yan Xiaonan last fought about, was it like 10 months ago as well, when she knocked out Andrade. And you think Yan Xiaonan knocking out Andrade was huge.
Yeah. But then Andrade is the one that knocks people out.
Exactly. I mean, but everyone should have been buzzing for this fight. But so much time has gone between that fight and now this fight that I feel like there's not as much buzz around it. I know it's not helped by the fact that they're sandwiched in between two huge title fights. Well, one huge title fight and one... Do we really care about the BMF belt? But the fight itself is so epic. Look, that, you know, it's...
Make no mistake, Dana White knows that China's tuning in for this.
Oh, yeah. But like, it feels like it should have been a fight that happened in China.
Yeah.
That would have been maybe better. But as I say, the division is sort of slowing down a bit. I mean, outside of, these two, you've got Suarez can't stay healthy. And she, for me, is the champion in waiting. I really want to see her fight Zhang Weili, because I think that her size and her wrestling can give anyone problems. And I think she could be the next champ in this division. But she can't stay healthy. She keeps getting injured. She's having problems. Jandiroba is on a nice kind of 3-fight win streak, but she's not exactly set the world on fire. Fans aren't clamoring to see her get a title shot or anything. So it just feels like the division is really slowing down a bit, and I don't really know what happens
because there's,
from here.
There's no...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I guess from the moment that the UFC finally put women in there to fight, you know, very early on, obviously, Ronda, and then Joanna made a name for herself very quickly, you know. And then I think she was one of them fighters that the way she would approach sort of weigh-ins and face-offs even, like, you know, a lot of people didn't really like her because she was quite bullish, wasn't she, in like in the way she carried herself. And obviously we now know that that's not who she is. But she was devastating to watch. And so she became such an exciting fighter. And then you've got this timid thug Rose that comes in and then, you know, just looks like this absolute little angel that just, it's, you know, won the belt, won it again. And all the time there's superstars there, and then you've just got Zhang coming through and doing what she done against them, both them fighters, and it just creates scenes, doesn't it? And like, and fighters that you go, I want to see him fight them, that person again. And what's happened is that the stuff underneath it hasn't really been given the marketing and the sort of love to feed it and create these characters to the to the fans. And I think that's why maybe a lot of the, and I'm not a big fan of the word casuals, but a lot of the people that aren't as invested in UFC as a lot of people may not be super aware of Jeanine. And I think that's a shame, because
I think that's really fair. And I think that's one of the problems with, like, whenever we are doing previews to big cards, nine times out of 10, there will be ranked female fighters, highly ranked, like top five, top seven female fighters in, you know, flyweight, strawweight, bantamweight, whatever it might be, fighting really low down on the prelims. And then there's unranked fighters fighting on the main card. And it's like, well, you're not going to build an epic showdown between two strawweight women for the belt or flyweight women for the belt or anything like that if you keep doing that. And I know they don't always do it, but it's the case a lot of the time. Now, 300 is slightly different. We'll get onto this in part two of our 300 show. But there's Marina Rodriguez versus Jessica Andrade. Now, there's problems with saying that that's a huge, huge fight because there's been losses there on both sides, and but they're both highly ranked. Should they be in a position where they're in the main card and not Bo Nickel, for example? We'll get onto that later as well. But there's certainly been a trend of big UFC numbered cards where highly ranked female fighters are lower down on the prelims when maybe they should be on the main card. And that is why you get situations where there will be more casual fans or whatever going, I don't really know who that Jeanine is. They know who Zhang is, but who's that Jeanine? And I think that is a problem for really boosting the fights and making the division. Like, Jandiroba is on a three-fight win streak. Do casual fans know who Vienna Jandiroba is? I don't think they do. So how are you going to build that fight for the winner of this, potentially?
Well, this is the thing, because when Zhang wins this, it's like, what's next for her? And like, and because, I don't know, maybe they're then thinking, if we look at one of those sort of lower-ranked fighters and maybe we drop the UFC in China and they, you know, they headline the card, then that person's profile can grow there. I don't know. When we sort of talk about Zhang, is she the greatest ever at that weight to do it?
I feel like I can't look past what... Do you know what? I'm going to have to pull up resumes now because I feel like I can't look past Joanna. Mm-hmm. For what she did and how she really built that strawweight division. And she was so, so terrifying. But how many title defences did... I need to work out how many title defences...
When she won that belt against... her name's escaped me.
Carla Esparza.
Esparza. I mean, that was one of the most horrible fights I've ever seen. Now, you just think, someone stop this. This is just... She's just absolutely bullying and... Esparza had zero answer to that.
Yeah, so Joanna had 5 title defences before she ran into Rose. I think Rose Namajunas beat her twice, her back-to-back. So then you got to consider Rose as one of the greatest, surely. And Rose, she won the belt, then she had 1 title defence, then lost to Andrade.
Yeah.
Came back. Did she beat Andrade in a rematch, in a 3-round fight, in a fight that was a split decision, very close, and Andrade could have gone on to win that as well had the fight been 5 rounds, I think, she was starting to take over. Then she wins the belt off of Weili Zhang, so she's a 2-time champ now, but again, only defends the belt once in the rematch to Weili Zhang, and then loses the belt to Esparza in the worst fight of all time. And so then you have to look at, okay, well, what did Zhang do?
Right, so let's look at that Esparza fight as being one of the most boring fights ever.
Yeah.
Like, has Joanna ever been in anything other than an absolute war?
I don't think so, man.
Rattle off who? Have you got...
Well, I've just pulled up Zhang Weili's record to talk about that, because she beat Andrade in Andrade's first title defence. She beat Andrade. Then she beat Joanna in her first title defence in that crazy... greatest female fight of all time. Then she loses the belt to Rose, loses the rematch to Rose, and then beats Joanna again, but the spinning back fist this time. It wasn't the same Joanna for me. And then beat Esparza for the belt and beat Lemos in a first title defence, and now we've got another title defence coming up. It's difficult, isn't it? Because Joanna with 5 title defences for me is probably the best strawweight. However, the 2 other women in the conversation for best strawweight are Rose and Zhang. Both of them have beaten Joanna twice. So how can you say Joanna's the best when she's been beaten twice by both those women? It's really difficult. But I do think one of the hardest things to do in MMA is defend your belt consistently. It's so hard to do. That's why you look at like Demetrius Johnson or Anderson Silva and John Jones, light heavyweight as well, and you just go, it's probably harder to consistently defend your belt than maybe go up in weight and win a belt. I don't know, but it's a really hard thing to do, to continually be motivated to keep defending that title. And I think title defenses should mean a lot. So I don't know. It's a really tricky one. It's a difficult conversation. It's difficult to know to really know. But
who are you picking?
Who am I picking? Well, I do think, even though Zhao Nan had that great knockout of Andrade, it was a slightly weird one because Andrade was kind of marauding forward. So I think she didn't expect Zhao Nan to have the power because I don't think Zhao Nan really knocked anyone out in the UFC at that point. So, but I've not really seen anything from Zhao Nan that makes me think she can match up to Zhang, particularly in the grappling as well. Like Zhang Weili, for that second fight for Rose, which she just barely lost, trained with Henry Cejudo, really started to get much better with her wrestling and her grappling. I think she's a much more well-rounded fighter than Yan Zhao Nan. But I do expect most of this fight to take place on the feet, but I think Zhang just has that thing in her back pocket of going, I can take you down if I need to, because Yan Zhao Nan really struggled with Carla Esparza on the ground. So I think Zhang Weili will be better in more areas and will be able to take the fight to wherever she feels like it best suits her.
Yeah.
And that's why I think she will win this fight. And then we'll have to see what's next for her after that. Does she move up in weight or can Suarez get fit? Because I don't know how many people are going to be clamoring for Vina Jandiroba to be fighting for the belt, but 3-fight win streak, she's kind of earned it.
Okay, let's move on to BMF, baby.
Oh, yes. This is the one, isn't it?
Yeah.
When we did like a little kind of like predict what our 300 main event was going to be. This was like my number one choice. I wanted this fight. And I know it's not the main event, but I'm so happy that this fight is taking place for the fight itself. There's some other things that we might want to get into about the kind of timing of this fight. But do you care that the BMF belt's on the line, or are you just like, no, I just want to see these two amazing fighters fight?
The BMF belt, I'm not interested in the slightest.
Yeah.
It's like, doesn't interest me at all. But if you can make fights happen by dangling that character fighters that might like the idea of that, I'm all over it because we're going to get to see Gaethje versus Holloway.
Yep.
Neither of these fighters are in boring fights.
No.
They're always in exciting fights.
This is the epitome of BMF, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. How do you think this goes?
So it's a tricky one. I mean, I do wonder if we need to talk about the actual timing of this fight.
Okay.
In terms of...
How many rounds is this, by the way?
Five rounds, right. Title fight, technically. But I feel like the timing of this fight is maybe not been great. And I think I was super excited when it was announced. I feel like it's going to be possibly fight of the year. But equally, there's an argument to be made that actually the lightweight and featherweight divisions would have been better off if this fight hadn't been made.
Yeah, whatever.
Because I hear you. But, I mean, and when they walk out to the octagon, I'm not going to be thinking about the lightweight and featherweight divisions. Yeah. I'm going to be thinking, oh, my God, it's happening.
Oh, I'm just thinking about the implications of what that could... Park that up, mate.
But it's true. I think it needs to be mentioned.
I know what you're saying. I do know what you're saying.
Islam is saying he wants to fight in June.
Yeah.
Does Dustin deserve the title shot when Gaethje head kicked him into oblivion only a few months ago? No, I know he had a great win against the 11th or 10th ranked Benoit Saint-Denis. Mm. Great win. I really like Benoit. Phenomenal. It was great. Does he get a title shot for that? He shouldn't do, really.
Do you think that that might have been in the discussions when Dane was like, look, this guy, I know he's not ranked high. It's a... What do you get from, you know, from losing, you know, what happens if you lose? It's a high risk fight. That you lose to Benoit Saint Denis, if you're a Dustin Poirier, you're disappearing out of them rankings. And like, he's Dustin Poirier, of course.
Yeah.
But do you think there was a, if you put something special on here?
I don't think a promise was made, but I think it makes sense because on this card we've got Justin versus Max. Justin should really maybe be the next guy up for the belt. Is he going to turn around in, say it's early June that Islam wants to fight. Is he going to turn around in 7-8 weeks to fight Islam Makhachev? I don't think so. Charles Oliveira's fighting Sarukin. We're going to get onto that fight in a minute. Mm. That could be a number one contender fight for the lightweight belt. Are they going to turn around super quick? And
who would you like to see fight Islam?
I want to see Sarukin. I think that is the most interesting stylistic matchup for Islam Makhachev is Sarukin. That's the fight I really want to see because I feel like that is the fight where I give the opponent, the challenger, the best opportunity to win. I'm not saying he'll be the favourite and I'm not saying I would pick him. I'm just saying that if I'm lining up contenders to fight Islam Makhachev, the guy who's got the best chance for me is Sarukin, not Gaethje, not Poirier, not Oliveira. It's Sarukian. So yes, but we'll get onto that fight. But you look at the featherweight division as well, and you think, well, now that Topuria has won, he's saying he doesn't want to fight Volk next, even though Volk has earned an immediate rematch. I, as a fan, want to see Volk take some time off. Do we want to see Topuria fight Ortega? Or do we want to see Topuria fight Max Holloway? You want to see him fight Max Holloway, don't you? And that fight might happen in a few months, but it can't now because Max Holloway is basically going to be in the equivalent of a car crash by fighting Justin Gaethje. So that fight's not going to happen now. So in a lot of respects, as much as this fight is really, really exciting, I think it has to be mentioned that actually there's a lot in the divisions that these two guys are in that is being sacrificed for this fight to take place. You don't give a shit, do you?
No, mate. Not at all. I mean, I just think I'm trying to. I mean, again, watching the UFC stuff this week on it. Fucking hell! You just start playing their fights, and you're just like, this is going to be ridiculous.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Like, how do you think this is? Do you think someone's getting knocked out in this?
I don't know, because
you got to go some. Well, who's going to knock Max Holloway out?
Well, maybe Justin Gaethje. Well, I've got a theory on this. I've got a little theory.
I wish we had some little music.
I don't know if it was Arnold that when he was on the show, he mentioned that maybe this could go the way of Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje, where Max is just too tough for his own good because Justin hits so hard and the ref's going to have to just step in, even though Max is still on his... Mm-hmm. He's still standing, he's still ready, he's still going, he's still swinging. But it's like a mercy of just like, let's go. The ref might just finish it. But Max is never really... Well, he's never knocked out. I don't even think he's really dropped. He's going to be less dehydrated now, so hopefully he'll be able to take even more punishment, which he's going to need to, against Justin. One thing when I was watching a few of their previous fights, we know obviously Justin has phenomenal leg kicks, but Max is susceptible to leg kicks. We saw it in, I think, particularly the first Volkanovski fight he had. He was really susceptible to those leg kicks. He had to switch stances a lot. Is his skinny legs going to be able to take what Justin Gaethje can throw at him in terms of leg kicks? And could we see a leg kick KO? You can't KO Max to the head, but can you KO him to the legs? Will we see Max Holloway not being able to stand come round four on either leg because he's been switching stances and Justin's just been smashing the shit out of his legs? Is that a possibility?
It's a very, very high possibility. I mean, surely Whitman's going to be going, look at this. And I mean, you know, it's not for us to second guess what's going on in Trevor Whitman's mind. He seems to know what he's doing.
I think he's all right, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's got a bit of experience.
He seems to be doing all right. But yeah, I don't know. I like the way that Max moves as well. I think he moves well.
Arnold spoke about that, didn't he?
Yeah.
How Max changed things up in their fight and he was moving around a lot more. He'll have to use that in this fight.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good chat. When the Arnold Allen episode drops, make sure you listen to Max. It's quite funny when he says, like, talks about that Max fight. It sounds to me like you think Justin Gaethje's winning this.
I think I always have to go with, like, size and power. At this level, if you've got size and power, it just does so much for you, I think. And I don't see Max gaining Justin's respect enough. I think he's a volume striker, and as the fight goes longer, Max might come on stronger. But yeah, I have to go with Justin. I have to go with the power advantage in this. Are you sad about that?
No, they're both like big favourites of mine. But I think Max moves really well, and I think Max does his best to stay out of range and picks him apart and takes it on points.
You think Max wins? Mm. But I'd kind of love to see it. It would throw. But I mean, I'm slightly surprised you're saying that. I don't think he'll be the favourite at all.
No, 100% not. But you can't write off Max Holloway, man.
Yeah, no, you can't write off Max Holloway, but I just think Justin's so powerful and so good. And I think the evolution of Justin Gaethje that we've seen over the last couple of years or so, where he went from just chaos to being a bit more disciplined and not just being as reckless as he used to be. I think that will really play into his hands here, and he'll be able to match Max in a lot of ways, and then Max won't be able to match him for power. But let's say Max won. What's next for Max?
I mean...
Excuse me. Basically, my point is, does he go back down to featherweight and try and get the Topuria fight? Or does he stay at lightweight and go, hey, I just beat the guy that was probably going to be one of the next guys to fight Islam. I should fight Islam. Does he fight the lightweight champion?
Oh, I'd much rather see that than... And for me...
You'd rather see him fight Islam than Topuria?
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
Because I like the idea of when Topuria comes up, wait for it, right? Not getting the title shot straight away, but fighting Dustin Poirier.
Hang on a minute. You're going to have to talk me through. This is another weird whiffing moment. So you want to see Max fight Islam because you want to see Topuria come up in weight as the champion, but not fight the lightweight champion, fight Dustin Poirier instead. In what world does that happen?
Well, I just think...
As if you're Ilia Topuria, one of the biggest stars in the sport, he'll be in a little bit as well. Like, millions of followers on Instagram. He's at the Bernabeu and 80-odd thousand people or whatever it is are cheering his name at Real Madrid Stadium. And he's going to go up in weight as the featherweight champion and not fight the lightweight champion. You just love Poirier. You just love saying Poirier's name.
I do just like throwing some random Poirier stuff in there. I'd like to see Max fight Islam. I'm not, do you know, now I'm thinking about Topuria Islam.
I would much rather see Max drop down. I want to see Topuria Max. That, to me, is way more fun than Topuria Evloev or Topuria Ortega or whatever. Like, I want to see Topuria versus Max Holloway. He's beat Volk, now beat the other... you know, quote unquote, whatever, like go to the division or whatever. Beat Max Holloway now. That's what I'd love to see.
Not convinced.
No, all right. Well, we'll move on then from another weird whiffin moment to Oliveira Sarukian. Again, that lightweight sort of tournament happening in front of our eyes. Oliveira.
There's some fucking great fights in there to be had in this division.
This is the marquee division. This is the best division in the UFC. And Charles Oliveira, one of the most exciting title runs of all time. Sarukian, only two losses in the UFC. One to Islam Makhachev, but on his debut years ago. He's a much better fighter now. And as we know, fighters on their debuts, they lose and then go on to do great things. And the other loss he has was to Mateus Gamrot. And I thought he won that fight. It was a close split decision. I thought he won that fight. So you could argue that, you know, in my eyes, the only loss Sarukian's had is to Islam Makhachev in his debut. He's got unbelievable wrestling, underrated striking. I think he's the biggest stylistic problem for Islam Makhachev in this division. And that's why I want him to win and go on and get a title shot. Because I really want to see Islam properly tested. We've seen him beat Oliveira. We've seen him beat Volkanovski, who's a featherweight coming up twice. If he fights Dustin, I'm not overly convinced Dustin's got anything for him because I think Dustin has holes on the ground. I think Justin would be similar if Justin fought him. So that's why I really want to see.
There's no flaws in Oliveira's ground game, but Islam made it look quite easy.
Well, Islam sort of seemed to beat him on the feet. He caught him with a big shot and then went down there. But I think Oliveira, and that's something I think might happen in this fight. If Oliveira beats Sarukian, especially if Sarukian does take him down, which I think he will, then I'm way more interested in Oliveira versus Islam again because he will have shown me that he's maybe fixed one or two problems. Because as much as Oliveira has the submission records and he's phenomenal off his back and all that stuff, if you're a very good wrestler, you can nullify a lot of Oliveira's skills. We saw Islam Makhachev do it at points. We even seen Michael Chandler do it at moments in that first round of their fight. He got top position and Oliveira was just taking shots. And I think that's how this fight can go. I think Armand, he won't be as good on the feet as Oliveira, but I think he's good. And I think that he won't be scared of taking Oliveira down. I think a lot of the problems that we see with people is when they are too scared of going to the ground with Oliveira. And if they get down there with him and they've got really good top pressure and they're a very good wrestler and they're safe and they're sensible down there, they can really get some ground and pound off and cause Oliveira a lot of problems.
Right. I agree with a lot of that. And I also agree that the Sarukian is a really good match for Makhachev.
Yeah.
If he wins and he beats Oliveira, do you think he's got the pull and interest from the fans to leapfrog over potential fights from the winner of Max and Dustin, sorry, and Gaethje? Do you think, basically, because yes, Dustin's win was, I'm not just going Team Poirier, but his win was against the ranked 11th, but he's got so much love and he'd done it in devastating fashion. It looked great. So do you think Sarukian can bypass Dustin, Justin, Max, and
it's going to be hard,
and get that shot?
Well, I think first thing is, if we're talking about Makhachev's next title defence, is happening in June. Mm. So Dustin is obviously the front runner because he's had time to prepare for it. Dustin's obviously the bigger star as well. But you could definitely argue that he's only coming off of a recent head kick loss to Justin and then beats a number 11 ranked guy. He does not deserve the title shot. And I think a lot of people will feel that way. The casuals obviously will want Dustin. Dustin will probably draw more eyeballs. But if Armin Sarukian at UFC 300 at this level can do something really impressive, I mean first round KO knockout, something like that, and then he gets on the mic and really calls for Makhachev and highlights the fact, that's the other thing. Don't just call for Makhachev and say, I'm the guy, I deserve it. Highlight the fact that the other guys in the queue don't deserve it as much as you. He has to come out and say, Dustin doesn't deserve this more than I do because of the loss to Justin. And he has to then hope, because next up will be Justin and Max, he has to then hope that that fight is an absolute car crash, which it very is likely to be.
But no one can turn around.
So that they can't turn around in 7 weeks. And he has to be available. Sarukian can't be like, oh, well, you know, I'll have to go back and see what checked out, doctor, blah, blah, blah. No, if the opportunity is there, you've got to take, because if he doesn't take this opportunity, then Dustin will fight Islam in June. Islam will probably fight again in Abu Dhabi in October. And you know they're going to pick, in my head, Justin, but maybe Max, if Max does it, unless Max wants to go down and fight Topuria instead. So then he's waiting till when? This time next year to fight Makhachev? Like that is, that's a long time to wait.
This is all conversations about should Sarukian win. He's got to get past Charles Oliveira, mate.
Yeah, and that's no guarantee.
Yeah.
I'm picking Sarukian, but every time I pick against Oliveira, Oliveira does really well. Yeah. Makes me look an idiot.
Yeah.
And I, you know, in terms of levels of competition, Oliveira obviously has the stronger resume by a long, long way. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like Sarukian's young and he has the skill set that troubles Oliveira.
Okay.
And that's why I'm going with that. But if Oliveira smashes through Sarukian, it won't surprise me.
Yeah.
Because Oliveira has been that damn good for so long. And the only problem he had was he came up against Islam Makhachev.
Mm.
So if he does win, I won't be shocked. But I just think a win here for Sarukian really cements in my brain that he's the hardest matchup for Makhachev. And that's the fight I want to see.
Yeah, there's a lot of superstars that he's got to make his case heard because most of them superstars ain't even got to say anything post-fight because the fans will do that online. You know, the UFC know where the money is. And, and unfortunately, the money probably isn't floating around Sarukian at the moment.
No.
Like you say, if he can do something special and get an early finish over Charles, I think that would be quite interesting. I don't think that's going to be very easy to do, though.
No, it's not going to be very easy to do. But if he can do it, that's how you do it. If he gets the decision win, good for him. It's still a great win. Beating Oliveira in any way, shape or form is very, very commendable. But I don't think that will leap him over Dustin, the winner of Justin and Max. And then that means he might have to take another fight before fighting for the belt. I think Oliveira might be the number one ranked guy. Mm. He might be number one ranked, but still behind two or three other people in terms of getting a title shot, which is crazy, but that's the world that we live in.
Okay.
Bo Nickel and Cody Brundage. Cody Brundage is probably like, oh my God, I'm fighting on the main card of UFC 300.
Yeah, I mean, what an opportunity for him to just go, hey, anyone heard of me? when your support, you know, is the rest of this card, he must just be thinking, am I being fed to the lions here, or is this a legit opportunity?
I think he knows he's being fed to the lions here.
But fucking good luck to him, man.
Yeah.
Because, what an opportunity to get yourself, you know, known to such a huge audience. But look, let's talk about the fact that this card, this fight is on the main card. Like, it's fucking weird, man. And, like, I know how the UFC works. And I know, you know, when we're talking about Jeanette and that, about, you know, you've got to bring these fighters up and showcase them. It's been no secret that the UFC and Dana White fucking love Bo Nickel.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to create a future superstar. He's obviously done nothing wrong yet in what he's achieved in the UFC. It, for me, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's so much on this card that, you know, it's not really affecting, you know, my sleep patterns, but I don't know. I don't think he could have, I'm sure he would have got just as many viewers had he had been on the prelims on this card.
Yeah, maybe. So I heard someone talking about this, and one thing that maybe stuck out to me that is like, that's maybe makes sense, is the UFC have got three title fights on this card, and we don't know if Oliveira Sarukian is going to be a quick finish or if it's going to go on a while or anything like that. Do you start the card with a quick finish?
Fuck off. You honestly think that's what they're thinking?
Maybe.
Oh, man.
It's hard for Brundage.
Fucking hell, Brundage, you pop after.
Yeah. It's like, do they start the card with a quick finish and go, well, we're in with a bang, guys. You know, the first fight of UFC 300, main card, everything you paid for. Boom, there you go. In 1 minute, Bo Nickel's taken him down and choked him out or whatever it is. I mean, look, it does seem like that is the thought process behind it. I know that sounds really unfair to Brundage, but as we've said, Bo Nickel is the kind of one of the poster boys of the moment type thing. All this amazing wrestling pedigree that we as Brits usually don't understand, Penn State, whatever it is, blah, 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 that the Americans go on about so much. He's clearly got really, really, really good wrestling, and that's probably an understatement. He's got to be working on his striking and all that stuff, but we saw against Val Woodburn, who's not the best fighter in the world, that, you know, he can throw hands as well. And Brundage is kind of like this little tiny incremental step up while still giving Bo Nickel this huge platform, and the UFC can really get behind him and say, we want this guy, this American wrestler, to be the American Khabib or something. We want him to go undefeated. We want him to wrestle everyone and smash him up, and, you know, it gives the Americans something to cheer about. Mm. I don't know. I think he's probably the biggest favourite on the card. I think that is what's going on here. I mean, in terms of Brundage, again, in terms of them picking Bo Nickel's best opponent that they can do for the trajectory they want him to have, Brundage was on a 3-fight losing streak. Then he fought Jacob Malkoon, who, you know, Malkoon was dominating him until he elbowed him on the back of the head and got disqualified. Mm. So, I think Brundage is technically on a 2-fight win streak, but one of them was a disqualification where he was getting beat, and the other one was that situation with Zachary Reese where he kind of lifted. It was that one where there was two in one night of those slam KOs.
Yeah.
He got one of the slam KOs. I believe it was the first one of the night where he just lifted him up when the guy was trying to put an armbar on him, and he slammed him down and knocked him out. that's sort of one of those kind of lightning in a bottle maybe moments. And as I say before, that his win was a disqualification where he got elbowed in the back of the head. So it doesn't make you think he's going to have a lot to bother.
Imagine that if he starts Bo Nickel with that kind of audience at that stage. Fucking brilliant. I'd love it. I'd absolutely love it.
It sounds horrible to say because I've got nothing against Bo Nickel, but there is something in you, isn't there, where you're like, he's the biggest underdog in the card.
Who was that?
No one's giving him a chance. And Bo Nickel getting all this fanfare. Yeah. It would be kind of funny to see that all ripped away and see Brundage get some flowers when he was not expecting to get it. He's going in there just knowing he's getting one paycheck.
Yeah.
If he lands a big right hand or whatever it is and knocks out Bo Nickel, I'm sure Bo Nickel will come back. The UFC will match him properly. People will say it was a lucky hit and he could still go on and achieve great things. But it'll be an amazing moment for Brundage to see this underdog. It'd be quite a feel-good story, actually.
Absolutely. Who was that dude that poor bastard they threw into Sugar Sean O'Malley? I can't remember his name.
Moutinho or something like that.
Yeah, with a green hair.
Chris Moutinho or something like that,
mate, how many people was just begging him to just get through that fight and win that fight? Yeah. And it was like, he put in a fantastic performance and it's like...
Yeah, even the fact that he survived for so long was really commendable and everyone gave him props for that, didn't they?
And it's like, I'd like to see it. I'd like to see... Yeah, I don't know. I'm not invested in Bo Nickel. It's not necessarily something that I'm super excited about, but I do appreciate that that wrestling audience in the States are probably absolutely salivating at the thought of it. Right, okay, so...
There are 8 fights on the prelims.
Mm-hmm.
How long have we been recording for?
Literally, just hit the hour mark.
Yeah. In that case, I wonder if we wrap this up now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are listening to this, if you're watching this now, we are going to go on and do a second episode where we talk about everything that goes on the prelims. UFC 300 part 2. And there's got some absolutely cracking fights on there. Jiří Procházka, Alexander Rakic, Sterling Cater, Holly Holm against Kayla Harrison, who's making her UFC debut after being such a big force in the PFL. Sadiq Yusuf, Diego Lopez. Jalen Turner versus Renato Money Moicano. That is going to be a great fight. Jessica Andrade, Marina Rodriguez could have implications for a title shot very, very soon. Bobby Green against Jim Miller. What a story that is, man. For a UFC 100, 200, and now UFC 300. And two former champions opening up the prelims, Cody Garbrandt and Davison Figueiredo. It's going to be amazing. So please go on to part 2 when that comes out. Either it's out already or it'll be out in a day or so please go and check that out. That'll be coming your way next.
Absolutely, go and subscribe, then you won't miss it. You'll get a little notification on your email from YouTube, or if you listen to these and don't watch them, then go and subscribe on whatever listening platform you do so on, and we will ensure that you will get a little notification that the new episode has dropped. And you want to be subscribed because, as we said, great chat of Arnold Allen coming your way soon, and we've got some other fantastic guests in the pipeline. If you enjoyed this and you'd like to say a nice big generous thank you, click the link in the show notes to buy me a coffee, and you can tip us. Other than that, you can tip us bollocks, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.